Let's do it. Let's go. Party time. Let's do it. Party time. On with the show. Here we do. Here we do.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
This is Andrew Dice Clay, apparently. This is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
It sure is. I was coming at you a little hot there. Audience, I apologize for that. Let's just say I've edited so much content. I've produced and edited so much content in the last 2 days that I feel like I'm becoming a sort of like hard-nosed Las Vegas, like five shows a day performer. And I don't know how they do it. I'm getting very...
No, I am all for efficiency. I appreciate it.
It's not even efficiency anymore. It's just like a complete sort of mental switcheroo where I'm just like, yeah, yeah, come on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. How are you doing? Let's check in with you.
You know, I'm good.
Good, good.
I'm good. You know, just living my life.
One day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I always say.
You know, and you, as far as I know, are the only person that's ever said that.
Yep, no day but today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that day is one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any small wonders, I guess?
I do, actually. So New York Magazine has this video series on YouTube where they look at people's homes. And it looks like previously it was not... particularly focused on any kind of notable person, but they did one on Amy Sedaris.
Oh.
On her apartment.
Is it like Cribs? Is that what we're talking about?
No, but sort of.
It sounds like explicitly the plot of Cribs.
We do walk from room to room, and Amy Sedaris, her apartment is everything you'd want it to be and more.
Well, I don't know what that means. I imagine a lot of gingham pattern.
The walls are just covered like floor to ceiling. She has a rabbit, like a live rabbit that hops around the house.
Just loose?
Yeah. I mean, she has a hutch for it, but she just lets it wander. She pulled back her comforter to show the holes the rabbit had chewed in her bedspread, which suggests a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the price you pay for having a delightful little woodland.
She has a craft room.
Okay.
That she calls the baby's room. She doesn't have a child. She just calls it the baby's room, and it's just full of crafts, except she has one pair of baby shoes that she just throws on the floor when people come over to be like, oh, and that's the baby's room.
Okay, you're right. That does not disappoint.
Yeah, it's delightful. What's your small wonder?
Fiber. It's good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I take it for granted, and I don't eat enough of it from time to time, and then there's a reckoning. And then I start, you know, reincorporating it, and instantly it's like Superman in the yellow sun. Like I just get my power from it. Fiber is amazing. It just makes everything work better.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, 31-year-old Griffin McElroy.
These are my concerns.
Here we are.
Metamucil. I have had Metamucil.
You have
before.
Definitely.
I don't like that you know that.
Since we've lived together, I believe I have seen you purchase it.
But not consume it, right? I do it in a weird way.
Find out more.
It's just me backstage at my Las Vegas show 5 nights a day and just cranking that, just snorting that Metamucil, just like, mm-hmm. just to keep my heart pumping.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go first this week.
I do.
I can't wait to hear it.
So earlier today I sent you a song.
Yes.
And I bet you thought, I bet she's doing the song.
I did.
And in a way.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk to you about my new favorite St. Louis Blues hockey tradition.
Okay.
Which is on that victory streak they had of 11 games.
Yes.
They used to play that every night in the locker room after they won.
We need to explain let's explain the number of things we need to explain.
The song is Gloria, and it is by Laura Branigan.
Should I play a clip of it, or should we just sing it? It goes like, Gloria! Gloria.
I would like you to play a
But this is a great opportunity because I can
for
sing
us
it.
To sing?
I can sing it.
Oh, you
perfectly.
Want me to harmonize?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, you do the high part.
Gloria.
Gloria.
Sounds like that. It also sounds like this.
I realize this was a thing, but it makes sense now that I hear it. You hear about sports teams having a lot of like superstitions.
Yes.
You know? And I didn't do a lot of research into like all the various teams, but I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with them. And the St. Louis Blues, I guess, typically have had a song when they win that they play in the locker room. Prior to this song, it was Run Around Sue.
What a terrible, terrible pump-up jam.
But there's a story behind them using Gloria. They were watching a Eagles-Cowboys game in Philadelphia in January as a team. I guess they were on the road.
Sorry, it's messing me up thinking about a sports team watching another sport.
I know.
Like thinking about these hockey players watching football and like giving a shit. Like all I do is make podcasts, and I don't traditionally go out there and like listen to audiobooks. This is a bad example. This is nothing. I am so far from being an athlete. There is no metaphor there.
So they went to this bar in Philadelphia, and there was a DJ. And whenever there was a commercial break, they would play music, and all these guys from Philadelphia would get up and start dancing. And they played this song Gloria a couple times, and one guy looked at the DJ and said, "Keep playing Gloria." So they kept playing it. And so this is just some local people while they were there. And so right there, they decided, the Blues team players decided they should play that song after they won. And they won the next game and got a shutout. And so they just kind of kept playing it. And this continued through their like franchise streak recently, where they won 11 games in a row.
Which is a record for them, right? Or does it tie the record? Yeah, that's the fastest superstition I've ever heard like develop. They were playing it while watching a game and said, "This song's a bop. We should play it after our games." Oh, we did it and won. Okay, so this is forever
kind of,
now.
It's kind of incredible that they started this in January, because in January they had like no hope of being in the playoffs. So the top three teams.
This is a new tradition. Yes. Oh, yes. Wow. Okay.
So the top three teams in every division, and there's like, you know, the Blues are in the Central Division, go to the playoffs. And they were like way out of contention, and like nobody thought they were going to make it. They had fired their coach just after 19 games, and they had a brand new coach. And then they moved up to third in the Central Division. They currently have 74 points, and the second place team has 78 points. So it's, you know, it's very possible they could get into second place if they continue playing well.
Well, they just got to keep listening to this slapper.
I know. Well, this is the thing. So they have since lost their streak. So I don't know if they're still playing Gloria. I hope that they are. The thing that's interesting is that just like apparently St. Louis has like rallied behind this song, and they keep reaching out to Laura Branigan's family and fellow bandmates for like performances of this song. But she passed in 2004.
Aww.
So they're not able to kind of continue this, but they've really appreciated kind of the renewed interest. There was an interview with the former drummer that says one out of every two people do not know that she even passed after all these years. But they are thrilled that the song has regained popularity.
It's funny, when you sent this song to me, like, I couldn't have told you the name of this song.
I know, but
let
you
alone
knew
the
it, right?
I knew the bah, bah, bah. But maybe I'm thinking of the Saturday night song by Elton John, because it kind of said, but no, like, I knew this song. I just didn't know what the word was that went into Gloria. It is so good. It is such a fun
song.
Yeah,
it was nominated for a Grammy, went platinum, and spent 36 weeks on the Billboard Top 100 chart back in 1982.
Wow.
And here it is again.
I love this. This is so good. Mm-hmm. This is very good.
For those of you, I think a lot of people are maybe surprised that suddenly I've started really talking about hockey, and I realized that when I did my episode of wonderful St. Louis Blues hockey, it was when we were still under our other name.
Oh, yeah. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So
Rachel
actually,
likes,
yeah. I'm a big hockey fan.
Rachel has been her whole life. Her father owns like the most memorabilia, like the most Blues memorabilia.
Growing up, we had like the 7 foot tall, like cardboard cutouts in our house. We had some seats from the original St. Louis Blues arena.
Yes.
We had several cereal boxes with hockey players on them. We had one of those, you know, the dome top pull, like foosball, but for hockey.
Oh, yeah.
We had one of those in our basement, too. Any number of pucks and sticks.
Your mom helmets. Also just loves how much stuff
she
there is.
Loves
it's her
it.
Favorite.
She adores that we have those things.
Can I do my first thing?
Yes.
It is the Green Wave. The Green Wave.
I don't know what this is.
It's the name for a phenomenon that I am familiar with, but I didn't know it had sort of a proper name.
Is this about the Green Party?
It's about, and I'm so glad that I have this platform. No, it is about when you are driving and you go from one place to the other without hitting a single stoplight.
Oh my gosh, I did this on the way here.
See, I wanted to talk about this because I had the worst drive home from Henry's daycare this morning.
Really?
On a good day, I can get home. On a great day, I can get home in like 13, 14 minutes. That is like ideal. No traffic on the highway.
Yeah.
All green lights, just like buttercream. I don't get stuck behind the train. I have a lot of obstacles, potential obstacles between me and home. On a bad day, it can take me like 35, 40 minutes to get home. So there's a huge variable in there. So when I get that good day, when there's no traffic on the highway and I don't have to like step on the brake pedal at all until I pull into our garage, like it is, I am so blessed.
Yes.
On those days.
I didn't know there was a name for this. I'm so happy.
Yes, it is the name for the sort of mythical incident where you get all green lights on the way home or on the way to where you're going. It's like the universe smiles on you. I get really frustrated at like human caused impediments to travel. I got IBS. So especially if I need to like get home in a hurry and I'm stuck behind somebody going like 20 miles under the speed limit, like I get so angry, or if I get cut off or somebody's just like being a jerk on the road. And also like traffic, I have very little patience for, which makes it even all the more miraculous when you just get this nonstop, no break ride. So I tried to learn more about like the odds of getting a green wave. And actually that's kind of impossible to calculate because there are so many variables in how signal timing works, which is like how stoplights run their pattern of letting their two different intersection paths go through. Traffic engineering is like a super complicated subject that I'm going to like barely scratch the surface of here. But basically traffic engineers have all kinds of way of controlling the like flow of traffic through an intersection using signal control. So there's one like major factor of how the signal works, which is if it is either timed or actuated. So timed stoplights are basically they do what you would assume, right? They run on a certain pattern.
Yeah.
If there's one sort of channel through the intersection that's more trafficked than the other, maybe they will get a longer green light, but it is set to a like specific pattern, you know, allowing each zone different times and making it so that they never intersect at the same time, because that would be very, very bad. But more modern stoplight systems, more modern signal systems can be actuated, and in an actuated intersection they can actually like take a look at what the actual traffic is in that moment and change the pattern based on that. And so if there's like one channel that is like especially busy, like one main road that intersects with like a very, very small, dead end road, that main road, they can tell how many cars are on it and favor them with a longer green signal. Or alternatively, if there's no cars in the other channel at all, they just won't switch the signal. It'll just always be green until a car pulls up to the signal, and then they will go about changing the pattern. And they can do that with a number of different ways. Like you see those cameras up on the stoplights at certain intersections, major intersections here in Austin, you can see them. Those are able to, look at the traffic and change the signal patterns based on that. Some of them are used.
I thought they were just designed to give you red light tickets.
That probably too.
Okay.
There are these things called induction loops that you can actually just build into the ground that can tell like when cars are there.
Yeah, I'm always obsessed with that, where I'm like, do I need to inch forward? Like what's going to set this thing off so this light will change?
So that's like one reason why the green wave is actually more likely than you would think. But there's another reason that is like so like apparent that I didn't realize until I learned about it. The existence of God, yes, if you want to lean that way. And also the existence of traffic signal networks. So there are, you can network these traffic signals, these actuated traffic signals, so that you can actually let an entire like battalion of cars drive through without having to stop at a red light. You can actually network them so that you create a sort of chain where they change in pattern so that they can let a huge amount of cars go through without any sort of interruption. And doing that is like so good for traffic on a macro level. It's also great for like reducing pollution. And there's all kinds of reasons why it is like such a great idea. Of course, it's not going to work for you like 100% of the time. And it's not going to, it's only going to be for the sort of the major roads. But if that's all you drive on, if all you do drive on is like the major roads, the highly trafficked roads, you're actually more likely to catch a green wave just because of the way that the signals are set up by traffic engineers. And there's a sort of future tech being developed that sort of takes the onus of catching the green wave off of traffic engineers and onto the individual. Audi in particular has been working to facilitate this. In 2016, they partnered with a traffic signal tech company, and they made it so that if you're within 13 major metropolitan areas, there's over 4,700 signals nationwide that this works with. In your Audi car, your car can speak to those signals and tell you like on your dashboard how long you have before the signal changes.
Oh, wow.
That's wild, right? And then just this week, the week that we're recording this, they announced this new thing that's going to be coming in their new cars, where not only will it show you that data, it will show you on your dashboard a suggested speed to drive at to catch a green wave.
I was hoping that was where you were going.
So it'd say like, you know, drive at like 26 miles an hour. And based on how we are timing this out and how we have these traffic projections and how the signals are timing out, you will catch a green wave.
The future is here.
The future is radical. The future is the coolest ever. I drive so much more than I used to these days, because when we moved pretty far from Henry's daycare, and I make that drive twice a day, and it can be very long. And so I was interested to learn like just how much stuff goes into like not making it a complete disaster, and finding out like why kismet happens so often when you're driving in a car. Mm-hmm. Hey, can I steal you away?
Do you want to hear some personal messages?
Absolutely.
This one is for Anne. It is from Nathan. Anne, you beautiful bean. I love you so much, and I'm so incredibly proud of you and how far you've come. Marsha, Mr. Kitty, and I are all rooting for you. Here's to another year of incredible adventures together. And to Micah, Chelsea, and Ben, and maybe Stella, let's get that game of Dungeon World going.
Hell yeah. Let us do get that. I heard that and I got excited like I was going to play.
What is Dungeon World? Is that the same thing as D&D?
It's kind of like D&D. It's like D&D, but with less rules and more sort of storytelling. This is very dry, but...
Well, I was curious.
Well, it's okay. So it's powered by the apocalypse. Anyway, here's the other Jumbotron. We'll talk more about Dungeon World
later. I want you
to
read this one, Griffin.
This is for my fourth favorite brother, and it's from Mackenzie, who says, I just want to tell you how I'm feeling. Gotta make you understand. Never gonna give you up. They got me. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna run around and desert you. It's the song. It's the song you play to make a person feel like a goober when they did it. You got me again, Mackenzie. P.S. Please pet Cobra Kid and Party Poison for me. And it's probably time to change the litter box, cowabunga. What a savage message this is. It burned me up, and then it sent some sort of like, splinter agent activation code there at the end. Thanks a lot, Mackenzie.
For those of you born in the past 5 years, he's referring to the phenomenon of Rickrolling.
Have you ever watched a movie so bad you just needed to talk to somebody about it?
Well, here at the Flophouse, we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. We'll watch it and we'll talk it. We do the hard work.
Featuring the beautiful vocal talents of Dan McCoy,
Stuart Wellington,
and me, America's Rascal, Elliot Kalin.
New episodes every other Saturday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, dude. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, what's your second thing?
My second thing is Nutella.
Is what?
Nutella.
Nutella.
Mm-hmm.
I know about this creamy brown stuff.
Me too. That's why I brought it. Nutella was actually created during ration times to make chocolate go further.
Oh, God, that explains everything. Because they call it a hazelnut spread, but gang, hazelnut is just a friend that chocolate brought to the party.
Mm-hmm. So back in 1806, Napoleon tried to freeze out British commerce as a way of taking over the world. The result was a disastrous continental blockade that caused the cost of chocolate to skyrocket and left Piedmontese chocolatiers in the lurch. Chocolatiers in turn started adding chopped hazelnuts to chocolate to stretch the supply as much as possible.
God, what weird future could we have gotten if they had chosen some other thing to chop and screw in there, like eraser bits or something.
Or like cheese goes up and so they start adding leeks.
Leaks. Well, that would not, all this would be good, actually.
Is that a good idea? Should I write that down?
I think we should probably get going on that leek cheese.
So at the time, it was called Jiandua.
That's beautiful, baby. That was so syrupy, what you just said.
It's named after a character from Commedia dell'arte named Jiandua. He is depicted as a smiling Piedmontese peasant with a three-point hat who rides around town on a donkey, clutching a duha, which is a dialect meaning container.
Okay.
You can't find this on the Nutella package now. I looked.
So it's like a little, like a silly man riding a donkey holding a container?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a character in Commedia? I don't think I understand what Commedia dell'arte is. Because I've always heard it's pretty highbrow. And if this is the heat that they're bringing to the table, that does sound pretty highbrow because I do not get it.
Mm-hmm. So it was renamed Nutella in 1964.
When Commedia dell'arte finally fell out of fashion.
Well, so over a century later, during World War II, chocolate again became expensive and scarce due to rationing in Europe. And so an Italian pastry maker named Pietro Ferrero in 1946 created Pasta Gianduja.
Wait, what?
I think pasta must mean something else in this case.
Sure, but we went back to the old container man name.
Oh, it didn't change till 1964.
Oh, okay.
So in 1946, still Gianduja.
Still crazy for Container Man. Love Container Man. Mm-hmm. Love his work.
It wasn't until 1964 where they started spreading like all over.
Yeah.
That they changed it.
By which you mean spreading all over every food imaginable, a blanket that surrounds the earth and protects it.
Well, I thought it was interesting because do you remember your first Nutella experience? Because
it was like college. I was up there in age.
I didn't realize it was an Italian thing because the first time I had it was in my French class.
Oh.
We made crepes in my French class and she brought in Nutella and we all were like, this is the best thing in the world.
You made crepes in your French class?
Mm-hmm.
We watched Finding Nemo in my Spanish class. That's like as far, but with the subtitles on.
Yeah, we had like a French food day and we all made crepes.
That sounds good as hell.
So in 1965, Nutella moved to Germany and then in 1966, it was in France. In 1978, they opened a production plant in Australia. And then in 1983 is when you started being able to find Nutella in the northeast part of the United States.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. It was here before I was even born, and I didn't know about it until like 30 years later.
Yeah. Now, if you happen to live in one of these lucky cities in Chicago, there is a Nutella cafe.
Ooh.
Where you can get crepes, gelato, oatmeal, granola, cookies, croissants, all with Nutella on it.
That sounds really nice. Mm-hmm. What's wild to me is that it was designed as this thing to make chocolate last longer by chopping and screwing in hazelnuts. And yet today it is like significantly more expensive than just like some regular non-hazelnutty
chocolate. Well, hazelnut, spread. I think, is a pretty, fancy nut.
Now we're mixing chocolate in to make the hazelnut last longer.
You can buy, so the reason I brought this up is you can buy little individual serving, like little individual 80 calorie servings of Nutella.
Mm.
So I've been doing this little hack at work where I take half of a sandwich thin, which is like 50 calories, and then some 80 calorie Nutella, and I give myself a little treat.
It's 180 calories, a good tasty dessert right there.
No, it's 50.
180 great calories.
50 plus 80.
You're talking to the math wizard over here. You're talking to the number cruncher over here, the math blaster.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Ferrero. I didn't know the connection between these mm-hmm. two things until we watched that most recent Bon Appetit video where Claire remakes the Ferrero Rocher.
She makes Ferrero Rochers. It's delightful.
It's really, really good. But I did not know that, like, it's basic. The stuff in Ferrero Rochers is basically Nutella, mm-hmm. Because it's like the same.
She didn't realize it either, and she Googled and was like, "Oh yeah, okay, same company."
Makes sense. yeah, man, Nutella's really, really good. I have not had it in a while.
So good. I used to think it was healthy because it was hazelnut.
No, quite the opposite, I would argue. Can I talk about my second thing?
Yes.
Wind farms.
You mentioned this the other day and how beautiful you think they are.
I think wind farms look super, super neat.
Yeah.
We've been watching more Hayori's Bed and Breakfast on Netflix because it is just a salve.
We kind of dipped out for a while as we had other shows to watch. And then we had this pleasant reminder that there are two seasons on Netflix.
True. It is just genuinely the most peaceful show to mm-hmm. watch. And Jeju Island, where it takes place, like, looks gorgeous. There are frequently, like, parts of episodes where there's just, like, wind farms in the background, because I guess it's a pretty big spot, and so they got
in a windy spot,
so they harvest that good wind. But I've always thought it, like, looked cool, especially if, like, I'm on a long drive and I'm just sort of going through a just plain where there's not much stuff to look at, and then just, like, over the horizon you see these huge turbines, like, spinning. I always thought it looks really, really neat. I should mention at the top, though, there's, like, you know, they can be exploitative of people living in rural sort of environments, because it is not unheard of for especially, like, private places, like private companies, to build their own wind farms to either, like, power their stuff or sell that energy for a profit, and put that basically right in the backyard of these people who live in rural environments without, like, getting any kind of blessing from them to do so. I read a report of a farmer in Minnesota who had a wind farm built 1,100 feet from his property, and it, like, casts, like, flickering shadows on his house.
Gosh, yeah, I could see how that'd make you crazy.
He talks about, like, how through the window of his office, he's, like, in there trying to do, like, their financial stuff, and just, like, blades of a gigantic, like, this strobe light effect. There's also, like, people who live, like, within a certain amount, like a slightly larger distance away from them, can have complained about, like, the noise that they create, this, like, low level constant vibration, like, frequency. And there are people who, like, complain about, like, health problems that causes. But there have been a lot of studies into that, and they can't really find a physiological
better
link.
Better than, like, a black smoke factory, but still
absolutely better than a black smoke factory. But there's no like proven link between the, like, physical side effects. But I mean, that doesn't discount the fact that people are sort of the main reason, the main sort of opponent, the human factor to these wind farms. But environmentally speaking, they are an increasingly reliable source of renewable energy, which makes them, I think, a very important thing. Back in 2009, which was 10 years ago, so obviously things have evolved since then, there was a report that found that wind power had the, quote, lowest relative greenhouse gas emissions, the least water consumption demands, and the most favorable social impacts among, like, sort of any energy source, including other renewable stuff like hydroelectricity. And these turbines have gotten just, like, more sophisticated and more productive. Obviously, like, windmills and turbines have been around forever, right? Like, around, like, 70 BC, the first windmill was invented. And for over a century now, like, farmers and people living in rural environments have used their own, like, private windmills and turbines to power, you know, on a very small scale, operations at their ranches. But the first wind farm was built in 1980 in southern New Hampshire. It had 20 turbines, which is a decent amount of turbines.
Yeah, to start out.
To start out with. And it produced 0.6 megawatts of energy, which is not very much. Just as a point of reference, the average American home consumes 10.76 megawatt hours in a year. So, like, not even enough to, like, really give a house power. But obviously, like, things have expanded. They have become more efficient. Today, the biggest wind farm in the world is in China. It's called the Gansu Wind Farm. It has hundreds and hundreds of turbines, and it produces 6,800 megawatts, which is a lot of megawatts. And it's actually just a fraction of its hypothetical capacity right now, which is ever expanding. Its hypothetical capacity is 8 gigawatts, which is a fuck ton of energy. There are efficiency issues.
Yeah, I know that's a lot.
Because of Back to the Future. I think he says gigawatts, which I don't even know what the exponential scale of that is. But they're hoping to like get it up to like 20 gigawatts by the next decade, which would be like a profound amount of energy. There are some efficiency issues because like it's you can't really put it on a schedule. And so there's some energy lost, especially because you have to generate this energy in like big, wide open plains, not close to cities. So in just like transferring that energy to cities, there's a natural amount of loss. But still, like it is growing. China has like led the charge among like the whole planet. 8 of the 10 biggest wind farms in the world are in China. They had this huge push to like explore wind energy, not only as like a environmentally kind of sound energy production method, but also like economically beneficial energy method. And a recent study, a study, I believe, around the 2010, the year 2010, was done by Harvard and Tsinghua University, and found that China could supply all of its power from wind energy by 2030.
Wow.
Which is like kind of remarkable.
There's a lot of people in China.
Yes, there are quite a few people in China.
Yeah.
And like individual turbines are getting better at producing energy, which means you, you know, hypothetically need fewer turbines to produce the same amount of energy at your farm, which makes them easier and cheaper to build, reduces their footprint, meaning you need like a smaller space. You don't have to find these huge open plains with like perfect ideal wind conditions. And again, like it's not just like the technology of the turbines that is improving. Like there's other stuff too. Just this week, actually yesterday from the day we were recording this, Google announced that Google has its own like private wind farm that they use to like power their headquarters. And they have learned, okay, it's like the big problem with wind turbines is it's the wind and you can't really always count on it because it's different. And so like, but energy, like you kind of need it to be stable, right? If we had an uneven amount of energy coming into this house, like shit would just like break down all the time. And so they can't predict the wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
But DeepMind can, which is their like adaptive sort of machine learning AI.
Oh.
It's machine learning AI can like look at all of the conditions of all the turbines and kind of predict like what the energy output of them is going to be. And they have claimed that it has made just like overnight the energy that they produce, quote, 20% more valuable. And nobody seems to really know what that means, but it is like it's a cool thing that just like instantly overnight, like just the whole idea of wind energy became better and more efficient because of this other sort of ancillary technological improvement. So, I mean, all that other tech stuff aside, like, and I think it is like important. I think that anything we can do to get away from fossil fuels is a good step in the right direction. But I just think they look cool, man.
Exactly. Well, you know, it reminded me, you know, how I talked about how much I love kinetic sculpture.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of.
It looks like the future. Like it look, they look exactly. Futuristic in a way that I also find very aesthetically pleasing. And the contrast of like them being out in the middle of nowhere and then like growing out. It's kind of like a, what is it? A tree grows in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But it's a huge mechanical pinwheel that grows in the middle of like you know, old farm or something. Mm-hmm. I just find the juxtaposition like very aesthetically pleasing.
Man, between the green wave and wind energy, like
yeah, this is really my Al Gore
episode.
This is
really your Al Gore episode.
Yeah, it really is. Let's close things out with some submissions from our friends at home.
Did we get one from Al Gore?
We got one from Al Gore, and he says the internet. Cool. Emily says, I take the train to and from work, and one of my favorite things is seeing a stranger on the train reading one of your favorite books. It's such a good feeling to know that they're getting to read a book that you enjoyed so much. Every once in a while, you get to have a little interaction with them where you connect about the book. I've been on both sides of these interactions, and they always make me so happy.
Oh, that's nice.
I've never had this experience, but when I was living in Chicago, I sat behind a woman who had a Zune. And I had a Zune, which was already very exciting. And she was listening to the same Wolf Parade album I was listening to at like the
Whoa.
Exact same time. And I was like,
that is the most dated reference you've ever made.
Maybe. Here's one from Rhea. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. Who says, I know games to play in the car have been recognized as wonderful, but let me tell you about my favorite one, Wonderful. On road trips, my girlfriend and I cast ourselves as guest hosts of the show. It's been a lovely way for us to learn more about our person, like how she unironically enjoys the aesthetic of Applebee's, or how I can speed read Fox and Socks faster than even the great Seuss ever intended. Don't worry, no plans on going on air anytime soon.
Oh, the at-home version.
The at-home version. And there's a good thing you're not publishing those because we're very litigious.
I encourage people to do this because I feel like it's been really good for me and Griffin.
Yeah,
Griffin
sure.
And I tend to be kind of high-strung people, and this has required us to focus on the things we like. And usually they are like small things that you don't have to pay money for and you can just kind of enjoy anywhere, anytime.
It's true. Thanks to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. Speaking of money can't buy things, that was the original name of the song I heard. It's a great song. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thanks to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Like we said last week, we're recording all of these like really close together. So time is a flat circle for me right now. But I think last week, from the time you were hearing this, we talked about this. But in 2 weeks, I believe, the Maximum Fun Drive is going to kick off. We're a pledge-supported network, which means that you, the listeners, can help support the shows that you like on the network. And we have gotten so much incredible support since we launched, Rose Buddies, and then since we switched over to Wonderful. And it means so much. And that's coming up soon. You'll have a chance to also get some cool rewards for that. We have a bonus episode we recorded for this show that we warned you about, I guess.
Yeah, you already know about it, and it's available to the donors.
To the donors.
Ha-ha.
It's our Will Smith sort of review, and it was fun to record and think about Will Smith's career. And thanks to Maximum Fun, like, they have all kinds of great shows. And that's it. How do you want to close this one?
Since you've been taking over the home improvement stinger,
yeah,
I've missed out on an opportunity, I think.
To do what?
To sing it
yourself. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, do you want to do that now?
No.
Well, then what? Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Welcome back, and thank you, Dan, for that scathing report. As you know, Max Fun Drive is coming up March 18th to March 29th, which has some folks pretty excited. But as families around the world get ready to celebrate this season of giving, community, and quality podcasts, some are wondering if it's just too much.
Are they, though?
They are. Some people are all for comedy and culture, but with 45 shows offering hundreds of hours of bonus content, plus all the Max Fun meetups taking place around the world, some people think it's too much.
While other people think it sounds totally awesome.
I took my granddaughter to the mall to get her picture taken, and the mall pod fairy was short. And I'm just going to say it. I'm sorry, but everyone knows the pod fairy is tall.
Well, I think we should just leave it there. Until next time, here's the news you need to know. Max Fun Drive runs from March 18th through 29th. Be sure to listen to all of your favorite podcasts. I know I will.